This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Apart from the President's State of the Union address, the other big political news yesterday was the outcome of elections in Israel. It turned out to be a great day for Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's Likud party. If you have a question about the Israeli political process or the implications of the Likud victory yesterday, give us a phone call. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is Hirsch Goodman. He's a senior fellow at the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University, a political columnist for the Jerusalem Report, and he joins us from his home in Jerusalem. And Hirsch Goodman, always good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
Was it a great surprise that Likud won by such a large amount? They got 37 seats yesterday.
No, it was no surprise at all. The polls have been giving them between 33 and 40. Even during the deepest time of scandal with charges of vote buying and this, and even the Prime Minister himself with the illegal campaign funds. So the numbers were no real surprise.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I don't think there were any surprises really at all. I think it was quite predictable, and that's why I think Sharon wanted to do these elections.
What is it going to mean, on the other hand, for Labour, which had its worst result ever?
Yeah, Labour lost its identity when war broke out after the Barak offer to swap land for peace, when Arafat turned that down and they got conflict. Instead, Labour lost its identity pretty much like the Conservative Party in England at the moment. It also lost its leadership. Barak left and there was no successor. And the person who took it over needs national experience, and even its 19 seats come as no surprise. It's a party that has to reform its identity. There has to be clear leadership coming out of there. It's got no clear message or ideology other than fluffy talk about having to divide from the Palestinians. So it's a party that needs to reform itself. In fact, I'd say one of the lessons that emerged from this election is that there's a need for a social democrat party in Israel to be effective opposition. There is enough common ground between the splintered parties of the left and center to do that.
Well, the centrist party that did the best is Shinui. It's a secular party. They got 15 seats yesterday. Was that a surprise?
No, that was predicted as well. The polls had them getting about 12 to 13 seats, doubling their power. I tell you, that is a very good indicator of what this election was. This was a hold-your-nose-and-vote election. Nobody wanted elections. We're facing, you know, a possible missile attack from Iraq. We're living with daily terror. All we needed were 30 political parties millions of public money being spent on jingles on TV and stuff and an election. Nobody felt like this election. Nobody wanted it. The one important thing emerged. When Sharon took over as Prime Minister, there was no election for the Knesset. There was only election for the Prime Minister. So he beat Barak. But he came into a Knesset, into our parliament, which has 120 seats, with only 19 seats. And about several months ago, his rating was very high, and he saw that he could probably get 40 seats, and that's why he decided in these elections.
After a great day of winning this triumph, Prime Minister Sharon is now faced with a less palatable prospect of putting together an actual coalition.
Yeah, I think it's mission impossible, frankly. He has 37 seats out of 120. He has people who are making their presence in his coalition absolutely conditional on the exclusion of others. Lapid Shinoi party says it will absolutely not sit with the ultra-Orthodox. Sharon cannot exclude the ultra-Orthodox from his government. The Likud's base leadership is Sfaradi and traditional. It would be unthinkable for him to exclude the religious from his coalition. So I don't think that Lapid can go in. The Labour Party has made a very clever strategic decision to redefine itself, to go into a national unity government, would totally obliterate it, gone. It would look like a party where people only want to be ministers and really are void of any ideology. And so then you have the extreme rights, who Sharon has a real problem with, because Sharon is for a Palestinian state, he says so openly, and he is prepared to go with the Bush proposals, which calls for such a state. And Lieberman and the other people in the national on the nationalist right wing won't go into a coalition that calls for a Palestinian state. So what I think could happen, and I have a funny feeling this may happen, is that he may decide to go with the minority government of 37 seats and just not have a coalition, but push policies that he knows he'd always have the support of other factions. For instance, if he does move on the Palestinian issue slowly, slowly, according to the Bush proposals, then he'll always have the support of Labour and Meret and even Lapid, and he knows he can move forward on that. It's a very precarious way to govern, but I think a coalition with 10 little partners, each of whom can hold a gun to your head, is a very precarious way of going as well.
All right,
with regard to, just last thought, if I may, with regard to putting together a right-wing coalition, I think the only thing stopping him from really doing that, frankly, is that I don't think your president, with whom we have very excellent relations, would sit idly by if we were to pursue those policies demanded, like the expulsion of Arafat, etc.
Mm-hmm. Our telephone number again is 800-989-8255. And let's go to David, who's on the line from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, hi, thank you.
Sure.
I just, I've listened to your program a lot. Thank you. Basically, part of that question was answered when he was talking about putting together possibly a far-right coalition. The thing here is, why hasn't he, you know, tried to go for more center? Because at times he's done things that have infuriated many different sides, including the Dome of the Rock incident.
Right. There's no question that Sharon today is as astonishing as this may sound, and I can't believe I'm actually saying it, but it's true. He is now positioning himself at the center of the Israeli policy community. He's positioned himself between two very extreme positions that have emerged since this war started with the Palestinians 2.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
One is the extreme right that says transfer, and the other is Labour and the left that says unilateral separation. And he's positioned himself in the middle there politically, and that's where he wants to hold himself. And therefore, the situation is such that if he takes Lapid and Labour into the government, we're in paradise. But Labour's not agreeing to go into the government, and Lapid won't go into the government if they're ultra-Orthodox. Sharon may be in the centre of the road, but he can't put together a centre-of-the-road coalition, and therefore I think he may just decide to stay with a minority government.
Yeah, that would make a lot more sense. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, David.
You're welcome.
Hirsch Goodman, for those of our listeners who don't understand the Israeli political system, you mentioned...
Do you think we do?
Well, we're hoping you do, at least to be able to help us understand a little bit better. 30 political parties, and the winner gets 36 seats out of 120?
Yes. There were a lot of parties that you have to get at least 2 seats in the Knesset to get into the Knesset. We're trying very hard to make it a minimum of 5. Well, we had, you know, we got a nice spectrum of parties here, from the Battered Husbands Party, and we've got a Green Leaf Party that wants to legalize marijuana, almost got into the Knesset, got as many votes as the Kahana Party, the new Kahana Party, the extreme right one. So, yes, I have to tell you, it's really quite something sitting here in the middle of a war and watching 30 parties vying in a democracy. It's really quite a stunning thing.
As we look at it, when you've got 30 parties who only need a relatively small number of votes to get into the Knesset, does this tend to drive parties of broad national interest, or does it, as you mentioned, the pro-marijuana party, does it encourage these niche parties that are just trying for a very small part of the electorate?
Absolutely. That is absolutely the case. What happens here is that we've got parochial parties that only care about their cause. The country overall is not top of their agenda. We've got ultra-Orthodox parties that demand money for the religious school system. We've got settler parties that demand money for settlements. We've got Russian parties that are trying to put things right for Russians. We've got a whole bunch of parochial parties for whom the national agenda, and that is why Lapid did so well. Lapid did so well because he said, we have to stop this. This is government by blackmail. We've got to put the system together. We've got to stop paying out to the ultra-Orthodox. It's absolutely ridiculous because they're the holders of the balance with 4 seats out of 120 in the Knesset. Because anybody to put together, even the Messiah couldn't govern here at the moment. To put together a coalition, you have to cut deals with 12 coalition partners, and each one has ultimate demands which are often contradictory to national policy.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go now to Al, who's on the line with us from Taos, New Mexico.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, my question that I'd like to see debated sometime nationally in the United States is the United States a continual, unconditional support of Israel really in the best interest of the United States? And there was a time in May, I believe, when the invasion of the tanks in Jenin and all that stuff, where Bush said enough is enough, and then a week later he's shaking hands with Ariel Sharon, calling him a man of peace, which to many people is totally absurd, I think. And the, you know, we pay all this money to Israel, whatever it is, $2 or $3 billion a year, and then now they've just asked us for another $14 billion, so that they continue to build settlements where the people who live there are subsidized. Well, of course they're going to go there. It just, and this is antithetical to any solution, as far as I can see. And many people, I think, throughout the world agree with me.
Al's question seems to be about American politics rather than Israeli politics.
Yes.
But Hirsch Goodman, I wonder, from your perspective in Israel, do Israelis see American support as unconditional?
No, I don't think they do. And I listened to what the previous guest said, and obviously the elements of truth that cannot be denied in discrepancies in policy and interest. But overall, these two countries have a very strong strategic alliance in a very critical part of the world. I don't think, unless the strategic alliance was real, American support would continue. America's got serious problems with human rights issues in Egypt. They continue to support them. Saudi Arabia is probably one of the most backward countries on earth in terms of its values versus your own. You continue to support them because you've got strategic interest to do so. And yes, you can point to the billions of dollars, but how much does it cost to keep aircraft carriers out at sea? And here you got one right here. So it's a very serious discussion and not one that can be dealt with in a flippant way. There's truth to what you say, but you also need context. You speak about Jenin. Jenin, the whole world said there was a massacre in Jenin. Thousands killed, hundreds killed. We watched it on TV. 53 people were killed in Jenin, and 24 Israelis were killed in Jenin. And of the 53 killed, most of them were armed. So, and Jenin came after the Passover massacre, in which all these people were killed by suicide bombers. But what we're trying to say is we've got to move on. And the critical issue is how we can get this government to move on, and how to get the Palestinians to move on. And I think American support in facilitating that process would be very, very critical, as critical as the aid issue is.
Al, thanks very much.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks. Let's go now, one final call, and go to Mark, who's with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just had a quick question. I wondered, actually, what the percentage of the population was that turned out to vote, and if it's similar to the United States, if it's about 50%, and if it's actually affected by the amount of violence that's going on. In other words, if the maybe the more peace-loving factions of society don't turn out in this situation because they're feeling frustrated.
Well, it's a very good question. The turnout yesterday was the lowest in Israel's history, 54%, over 70%. People were very, very apathetic. As I said at the beginning of this conversation, it was like a hold your nose and vote election for many people.
Right.
The left did come out. That's they really, well, the centrists did come out in force for Lapid. And the smaller parties, which are parochial parties, have narrow agendas, came out and voted to the full. But one of the benefits of having like almost 30 parties running in the election is that the vote is so fragmented as well.
Right.
That people go out and vote, but this was the lowest in our history, and it just sort of is indicative of how unnecessary people felt an election was at this point in time.
Well, Mark, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Hirsch Goodman, thank you very much. We always appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
Hirsch Goodman is a senior fellow at the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies at Tel Aviv University, a political columnist for the Jerusalem Report, and he was with us from his home in Jerusalem.